Did you know that no team has made the playoffs after starting 0-3 since the NFL expanded the playoffs in 2020? And in the Super Bowl era, only six teams have made the playoffs after starting 0-3. The 2018 Texans, 98 Bills, 95 Lions, 92 Chargers, 82 Buccaneers, and 81 Jets. This is The Numbers Game. I'm Cynthia Freeland, and I think you know where we're going to start this week. So let's get to it. In this episode, we are going to cover all 14 games in the Sunday slate, which means we will leave the Monday Nighter for its own separate show to go a little deeper into that excellent matchup. But before we move on, let's do some accounting. Last week's results went like this: 12-4 straight up, 8-8 against the spread, and 8-8 on totals, bringing my season average to 71.9 straight up, 48.4 against the spread, and 43.8 on totals. I think starting with the Sunday Nighter is the ticket, because we get to address my personal pet peeve. When people talk about 0-2 teams having just a 12.2% chance of making the playoffs, that is not right. It is that 12.2% of historical games have resulted where the teams that have started 0-2 have made the playoffs. So 35 teams of the 288 that have started 0-2 have made the playoffs, 19 have won their division, and 3 have won the Super Bowl. And if you look at 0-3 teams, it's actually only 4 teams of the 165 who have made the playoffs. That's 2.4%. And only 2 of the 0-3 starters have actually gone on to win their division. That's 1.2%. And none have won the Super Bowl. So it is not a forward-looking 1.2% chance. It is that has happened in the past. So you can say only 1.2 of historical, blah, blah, blah. You get where I'm going. I will get off my soapbox now. Okay, thank you for letting me do that. Back to the task at hand. Obviously, I'm referring to the 0-2 Chiefs, who are traveling to New Jersey to face the 0-2 Giants. Kansas City is a 6-point road favorite, and the total is 45 points. Patrick Mahomes has 7 of the Chiefs' 9 explosive runs. Those are 10-plus yarders. And he's throwing deep on 12% of his attempts. That's his highest rate since 2019. By the way, he's completed 3 of those for 136 yards and a touchdown. That's 17 yards per attempt, which is 7th most. And he has a 125 passer rating. That's 6th highest. This is a big uptick from the past few seasons, and especially last season, where he ranked 33 of 36 qualified quarterbacks in both metrics. And that is with basically one hand tied behind his back based on injuries and unavailability of Rashee Rice and other wide receivers. As of right now, Mahomes is averaging the second quickest time to throw, 2.47 seconds. If that happened for the whole season, it would be his career fastest. He also is not getting the results that I think he wants on them. He has the 5th lowest completion percentage on these quick passes and the 4th lowest success rate. Extended dropbacks, there's only been 7 of them. Those are 4-plus second passes. He has done well on those. He's completed 5 of those 7 for 145 yards and a touchdown. That's an average of 20.7 yards per attempt. That would be the highest in the next-gen stats era if it continued for the whole season. My last Mahomes note here is that he's completed just 6 of 18 passes for 85 yards with 1 touchdown and 1 interception against the Blitz this season. This is not normal. In week 2 against the Eagles specifically, he was blitzed about 30% of the time and completed only 3 of 10 passes for 42 yards and an interception. What does this mean? Well, overall, the Chiefs' run game right now is still a big red flag, save for Mahomes, of course. The deep pass plays are there and they work when he has time for them to unfold, but pressures and blitzes have worked against him, and the underneath stuff that's usually high probability has not clicked yet. The Chiefs' pass catchers have averaged just 5 yards after the catch per reception this season, so 45.2% of their total receiving yards have been gained after the catch. It's about 18th in the NFL. And last season, they actually were 6th best in this, 6.2 yards after the catch, and earned the greatest percentage of their yards after the catch, 61.5. That was the most in the NFL. So things are changing, and they'll figure it out. But as of right now, it hasn't clicked into place yet. The strength of the Giants' defense should be up front, but it hasn't really worked out that way, as in the Giants have generated just a 31% pressure rate this season. That's 10th lowest in the NFL. New York's interior defensive linemen have generated only 5 combined pressures this season. That's tied for 3rd fewest among all interior defensive line units. The edge guys, they are living up to the billing, though. They've totaled 24 of the team's 38 pressures. That's 63%, and the 5th highest share among all edge groups in the league. Brian Burns primarily lines up on the right side of the defense, which means left tackle Josh Simmons and even left guard Kingsley Suma-Matia will get a test from him. Last week, Russell Wilson got the moon balls going. He was 7 of 11 for 264, 3 passing touchdowns, and 1 pick on deep passes. That is the most passing yards on deep passes in a game in the Next Gen Stats era. Overall, Russell Wilson's averaging 2.69 seconds to throw. That's his second quickest since 2016. And he's still being pressured at an over 41% rate, which happens to be the sixth highest in the NFL. And the results aren't great. Is the fifth lowest completion percentage and seventh lowest success rate when pressured. Andrew Thomas being gone is a big deal. However, Malik Nabers is still a bright spot. He leads the NFL in targets with 19, receptions with 12, and receiving yards with 211 on passes outside the numbers. Those 211 are 106 more than the next closest player. By the way, if you're keeping track, he has 875 such yards since entering the league in the beginning of last season. Don't forget about Wandale Robinson either. He did appear on the injury report this week, so put a little asterisk on that. But in week two, he caught 3 of his 4 deep targets for 107 yards and his first career deep touchdown. He's been targeted on 54.5% of the Giants' third downs this season. That's the highest third down target share in the NFL. What does all of this mean? Well, the run game is a question mark for the Giants, with Cam Scadabo out-snapping Tyrone Tracy 33-27 in week two, Tracy also on the injury report, and the O-line, well, it is a big red flag. But when it works, the deep ball is a huge weapon for New York. The Chiefs' defense is going to blitz. Newsflash. Oh, wait, everyone knows. They're actually tracking at the second highest rate this season, 48.5%. They've been in the top half of the league in blitz rate in 5 of the last seasons. Hello, Steve Spagnuolo. That is what he does. And against the Eagles, they actually blitzed 64% of the time, which was the highest in the Spags era. And usually it's a good unblocked pressure generating, 357 on the Spags, which is the fourth most over that span. However, this season, the number is only at 5 so far, and the pressure rate is actually tracking at sub 35% when they blitz. It's just 2 games, so it's a small sample size, but I am keeping track of it. Bottom line, I have the Chiefs taking this one by 7, 25-18. Do we see pre-snap motion come back to be the weapon that the Chiefs offense is used to using it at? Right now, they're using it at the fifth lowest rate, 47%. They have not been outside the top 8 since 2018. They average 66% of plays with motion. Now, this season, the game script, okay, maybe that's why, but on plays with motion, 2/3 of them have turned into passes, which is kind of a tell. But Chiefs by 7 for me because of 15 and the Kansas City defense that held the Eagles in check last week. Since it's the Sunday nighter, let's do a 3-point stance on this game because we all need things to watch together. All action items are based on my notes and they are all risky, but they are in order of least to most risky. My model likes all of them though. Number 1, Isaiah Pacheco to earn more than 47.5 scrimmage yards. The Chiefs are averaging the fifth highest shotgun rush rate this season, 61%, and they have the sixth most EPA per shotgun rush, 0.33. We get it, most of that is actually Mahomes. However, more pre-snap motion and a better opportunity to run than against the Eagles. Because why? Well, the Giants have allowed the most yards per shotgun rush this season, 7.9, and the fourth most rushing yards over expected to them at 2.1. I'm adding in the receiving yards here to also be safe. The Giants defense, they've allowed the most total yards per game at 455 through 2 games. Number 2, Wandale Robinson to have more than 43.5 receiving yards. I saw him earn a deep touchdown last week, which means he could get it all at once. Even though it's not actually a great matchup for that because the Chiefs defense, they've just allowed 1 deep touchdown in 7 attempts for only 28 yards. But focus on that third down target situation that I talked about before. And remember, it's almost 55%, the best in the league. Number 3, Tyquan Thornton's longest reception to gain more than 20.5 yards. His air yard target averages 29.7, which is wild. That's the most in the NFL. He also runs the most vertical routes, 68% of the time. He has only 9 targets and 7 have been deep, and he's only actually caught 2 for 87 yards and a touchdown. But that's why this one is a nice risk in this particular situation, and it's only 20.5 yards. 4 of this week's games feature a backup or a potential backup quarterback, so let's hit those kind of fast here. We are for sure getting Jake Browning and Carson Wentz starting for the Bengals and Vikings in Minnesota, where the home team is a field goal favorite and the total is 42.5 points. Okay, maybe it's not as fun now, but it's still extremely cool that former LSU teammates Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, so Jefferson has 95.7, Chase 87.8, averaged the most and second most receiving yards per game in NFL history. Since we do know about Jake Browning a bit more in this particular offense, let's recap those numbers. He's 4 of 3 as the Bengals starter in 2023, and he ranked top 4 in completion percentage, 71.5, and passing yards per attempt, 8.2 in that span. Jamar Chase's receptions, receiving yards per game, and touchdowns go down. T. Higgins, they all go up. Tight coverage and that chemistry familiarity is the reason for that. Fun fact, Carson Wentz and Vinny Testaverde are the only top 3 picks in the common draft era to start a quarterback with 6 different teams. Now, Wentz is actually 6 for 6, 6 different teams, 6 seasons. He was on Kansas City last season. As for Minnesota, they've gone 3-6 with 9 starts by backups under head coach Kevin O'Connell, but it's going to be a tough day at the office. They've allowed 9 sacks so far. Only the Titans have given up more. There's no Aaron Jones. Jordan Mason is there, though. Bottom line, I have the Vikings winning 25-21, even though Cincinnati's defense has not given up a single deep reception yet. And Minnesota does not have one single interception yet. They led the league with 24 last season. The defensive fronts are the difference for me. The Bengals are likely without Shamar Stewart, meaning Trey Hendrickson will have to do even more, although he has 2 sacks and 6 hits, which is more than the rest of the team combined. One thing to note. We saw Jake Browning fare really well against the blitz last week and in 2023. He had a perfect passer rating and 2 touchdowns with none of the 3 interceptions when he faced the Jags blitz. But the Vikings and the Jags, not the same in terms of pressure from the blitz. Minnesota has 136 pressures off of blitzes since the beginning of last season, which is 2nd most in the NFL. So it's going to be a little bit different in terms of how effective the blitz will be. Jets quarterback Justin Fields has been ruled out, which means it's Tyrod Taylor under center against the Bucs and Baker Mayfield, who's playing despite an injury scare of his own. And also, he has an extremely banged up O-line. The game is in Tampa and the home team is a touchdown favorite. Breece Hall has averaged a speed of 11.2 miles per hour at the line of scrimmage this season. That's the 3rd highest, fastest, among running backs with at least 15 carries. When Hall exceeds his average speed at the line of scrimmage, he averages 8.5 yards per carry. When he doesn't, it's just 3.3 yards per carry. Get him going. The point here is that when the line and the scheme help him to get moving before first contact, the results are better. In this matchup, Vita Vea and that run-stopping unit will have something to say about that. Tampa Bay will look to run inside, even though Cody Mock has been lost to injury. As of now, they have the 2nd highest inside rush success rate by running backs this season. It's over 58%. And they actually are 10th in running back yards before at 1.1 and after 3.4 contact per inside rush. They also have 100 plus rushing yards in 10 straight games, which is the longest active streak in the league. That's so interesting because it used to be such a big problem. The Jets will look to shore up their run-stopping defense as they are tracking at allowing the 5th most rushing yards over expected on inside rushes, 0.8, and the 4th most yards after contact per inside rush to running backs this season at 4.4. Bottom line, I have the Bucs winning 26-18. Just so you know, the Jets defense has allowed 30 or more points in each of their first 2 games, and they've only earned 17 quarterback pressures as a team. That's 4th fewest in the NFL. One fun fact here, the Bucs have not started 3-0 since 2005. Brock Purdy has a chance to play against the Cardinals, but it is more likely Mac Jones that will again be the 49ers starter in San Francisco, where the home team is a 1.5-point favorite and the total is 43.5 points. Barring any unforeseen circumstances, Kyler Murray will be playing, and he's completed 2 of 3 deep passes this season. That's a 67% rate, which is tied for the highest. That is a tiny number, but it could be a signal of things to come, especially because San Francisco has allowed the 6th highest yards per deep pass attempt this season at 16.5. The Cardinals' defense has allowed just the 5th lowest EPA per dropback when they blitz this season. It's -0.58. And the Niners have the 7th lowest pass success rate against the blitz, 31%. So perhaps we'll see an uptick in the Cardinals' blitzing. Last week in New Orleans, Mac Jones became the first quarterback besides Brock Purdy to start and win a game for the Niners since Purdy became the starter. That was back in week 14 of 2022. He averaged just 6.5 air yards per pass attempt. If you were looking at this, it's 6th lowest among quarterbacks. My point is to say it wasn't very high. But intermediate passes, they worked. Intermediate passes into space, throwing your receivers open. It's the Shanahan special. Zone coverage, key to this. So, Mac Jones went 23 of 34 for 253 and 2 touchdowns against the Saints zone. The Cardinals play zone. They do it about 77% of the time so far this season. So what happens? If you look at Mac Jones' results against zone last year, he was 2 touchdowns, 6 picks versus zone. By the way, it was 6 touchdowns, 1 interception versus man. So are we seeing greatness against the zone or interceptions? What do we see? The answer is probably somewhere in between, but the Shanahan get you open special, that will help him out ultimately. I think he's like a very rehabable quarterback here. I'm excited to see how he grows. My defense note on the Niners is this: Nick Bosa and Fred Warner. Okay, let's just look at Bosa here. Last week, he tied his career high with 5 quick pressures. So those are pressures that happen in under 2.5 seconds. And he had a key fourth quarter sack, which really matters and feels like it's characteristic of him. He splits his time on the left and right. So both Paris Johnson and Jonah Williams will be tested. Both currently rank in the top 10 in pressures allowed so far, meaning the least amount of pressure. Who wins? This is the upset section of the show, so my model's picking the upset. You get the theme here. Cardinals win 23-22. The Niners lost both matchups in 2024, and Christian McCaffrey missed both matchups. Maybe he's one of the only guys who I don't have an injury flag on this week. I'm exaggerating, but Kyle Juszczyk, Juwan Jennings, Ben Barch. My point is, they love to play 21, and this will likely not be as possible. That's what we saw happen when Juszczyk left last game. So that kind of changes the flow of everything. And the run game has not necessarily been a strength, just 3.2 yards per attempt, whereas Arizona is very stout against the run. In our nation's capital, it's possible Marcus Mariota will start for the questionable, as of now, Jaden Daniels, who hasn't missed a game yet in his career. The Raiders come to town looking to earn their second win. Commanders are favored by 3.5 points, and the total is 44.5. Let's talk about Las Vegas's run game. They're allowing exactly 0 yards before contact per carry by running backs this season. That's 5th fewest in the NFL. How does that relate to Ashton Jeanty? Well, 77 of his 81 rushing yards have come after contact. That's 95%, 6th highest among running backs. He also has 7 rushing attempts for negative yards, which is tied for the most in the NFL. Washington is allowing negative 0.2 yards before contact per carry this season, 4th fewest in the NFL. And they've allowed the 4th lowest explosive rush rate to running backs as well. They're also allowing 105.4 rushing yards per game through 2 games. Only 57 yards of those are going to running backs, though. The last time Marcus Mariota started a game, it was week 13 of 2022, and that was with the Falcons. It was a loss to Pittsburgh, but he has come in relief and been here since last season with Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels, who we saw get sacked 7 times so far this season, tied for the 4th most, and the rookie first round right tackle, Josh Connerly, he's allowed 3.5 of those, which is tied for the most sacks surrendered in the NFL. The Raiders defense has 6 sacks and Max Crosby, who had 5 tackles and 3 pressures last week. He's got 61 pressures, 22 hits, 8.5 sacks since the beginning of last season. So it's not going to be easier without Austin Eckler in this one either. Bottom line, I have the Commanders winning by 6, 26-20. This one comes down to Washington's ability to generate pressure. The Raiders' tackles have combined for 18 total pressures allowed this season, the 9th most among tackle groups. The Commanders are tracking at a 48% pressure rate, which is 2nd best. Dorrance Armstrong has lined up on both sides, so either edge. He has 13 pressures on 53 pass rushes, which is tied for the 2nd most pressures in the NFL, and his pressure rate, which is 25%, is 3rd highest. Geno's splits do show that all 4 of his touchdowns have been thrown when he hasn't been under pressure, though Dan Quinn's ability to pair pressure with coverage is a difference maker here. Let's play a game of big names and big games. So that's 3 big names who could have big games or maybe could be in a bad spot this week. And let's base them all on those 4 potential backup quarterback games. Number 1, Deebo Samuel against the Raiders. I like the Commander to haul in at least 5.5 passes. If it's Jaden Daniels, that number is not so risky. If it's Marcus Mariota, it's a bit riskier, but still tame either way. Samuel leads the team with 140 scrimmage yards and 2 touchdowns, and he has 7 or more receptions in back-to-back games for the first time since 2019. Here's a riskier play in the same game. Terry McLaurin touchdown? Perhaps Deebo's usage over these past 2 games could lead to coverages coming to him and giving him attention, so Scary Terry would have space to work. Number 2, Justin Jefferson against the Bengals. I like the Vike to have more than 5.5 receptions in this one, which isn't that risky. I also like a touchdown, which is. His 12.5 completion rate over expected against press coverage since the beginning of last season ranks 5th best, and Al Golden, he's asking those outside corners to press at a high rate, 10th highest, 31.2%. And number 3, Christian McCaffrey against the Cardinals. I like the Niner to reach pay dirt again. That's jockey. The riskier play is under 70.5 rushing yards. I already told you the Cards are good at limiting rushing yards this season, and CMC leads the NFL with 50 scrimmage touches. He leads the Niners with 17 targets and 15 receptions. That's the most receptions among running backs. I like his yards to come from passing plays. I'm starting to worry that my model is close to becoming sentient. Just kidding. Although I'm kind of not, I don't know. It picked 5 outright upsets this week, and it started with that Cardinals over Niners pick that we just did. So let's move on to the other 4 next. My model believes the wrong team is or was, depending on when you're listening to this, favored in Chicago. Now the Cowboys, they're coming to town, and the books, at least they used to say, Bears by 1 with a forecast total of 43.5. You'll see what I like no matter what, but even if it flips, you're still good. The Cowboys have used motion on 38% of their plays. That's 11th most, and up 10 percentage points from last season where they were in the bottom 10. Now, spread formation. They use it at the 5th highest rate. That is down about 10 percentage points from last season where they led the league with 41% before Dak's season-ending injury changed things. The mismatch here is CeeDee Lamb in the slot. He leads the NFL with 2,248 yards from the slot since 2022. That is the most by 577 yards. 8.9 yards per target from the slot, 7th most. He's targeted on 27.2% of his routes from the slot, 6th highest. All of this is since 2022, just so you know. And Chicago, this season, they've allowed 10.5 yards per target to players lined up in the slot. That's 3rd most. Their primary slot receiver, Kyler Gordon, has yet to play this season, and he did not practice as of this recording. What about the Bears in pre-snap motion? We know Ben Johnson loved to do it with the Lions. They did it like 2/3 of the time. What's going on here? Well, they're using it at the 7th lowest rate, but 4 of their 5 touchdowns came on plays when they had pre-snap motion. Caleb Williams is being pressured at a slightly higher rate than last season, despite an offensive overhaul in the interior line, 39% versus 38%. Yeesh. And they're tied for the most offensive penalties with 12. The bright spot here is Rome Odunze, who's caught 5 of 9 targets for 75 yards and 2 touchdowns across just 33 routes when he's aligned on the ball. Now, last year, he ran 363 routes aligned on ball with 0 touchdowns. That's the most ever without a touchdown. This year, he's running fewer such routes, and it's about down about 20 percentage points, and he's more effective when he does so. So there's another place where Ben Johnson's already making a difference. Bottom line, I have Dallas by 2, 25-23. The Bears' defensive pressure just isn't cutting it. It's just 24.5%, 4th lowest. And yes, we've seen Dallas's defense give up 30.5 points per game and 404 total yards per game, but pretty much take out that Giants game and we'll have to reset that data because, remember, those were crazy amounts of deep passes, 315 yards and 3 touchdowns on those deep passes. And Caleb Williams isn't as much of a deep passer, just a 45.8 career passer rating on these 20-plus air yard attempts. Pittsburgh is a 1.5-point road favorite in Foxborough in the next wrong team favored game, according to my model. That's Steelers at Patriots, and the total in this one is 44.5 points. Aaron Rodgers has averaged 5.7 air yards per attempt this season, 3rd fewest in the league, and his fewest since 2016. He's targeted receivers under 10 air yards at the 9th highest rate, and 71% of his passing yards have come after the catch. That's over 10 percentage points more than any other quarterback in the league. However, the Patriots have allowed the 3rd highest completion percentage to quarterbacks targeting receivers under 10 air yards, so 83%, and the 4th most yards after the catch this season with 290, which means it's extremely likely he'll take over sole possession of the 4th most passing touchdowns in NFL history. Right now he's tied with Favre. He just needs one more to pass Brett Favre. On the other side, Drake May has earned the 2nd most EPA per quick pass this season at 0.43, and Pittsburgh has allowed the highest success rate, 65.2, and most yards per pass at 9.2 against quick passes this season. Bottom line, Patriots win this one at home 23-22, largely because of the New England defensive front, who leads the NFL with 9 sacks so far this season after ranking last in this metric with 28 last year. Their 43.4 quarterback pressure rate is 6th best as well. And the former Eagle turned Patriot, Milton Williams, has the 2nd highest pressure rate individually, 20%, among defensive tackles, and he has 2 sacks. Another potentially incorrect line, according to my model, occurs in Jacksonville, and it's between the AFC South rival Texans and Jags. The home team is favored by 1.5 points, and the total is 44.5. As of right now, Houston's offense is averaging just 14 points per game, the fewest in the league. On third down, their worst, 22.2%, and they have yet to score a touchdown in their three red zone drives. Both of those metrics are also the fewest. Christian Kirk and Braxton Berrios are tracking at returning, which is good news. And remember, those stats were earned playing the Rams and the Bucks, which are two very difficult defenses. Jaguars running backs have rushed for 88 yards over expected through the first 2 weeks of the season. That's the most of any team. They're also averaging 0.03 EPA per rush. That's second best in the league. And the Texans defense, they're the most generous in terms of allowing EPA per carry to opposing running backs. Bottom line, Houston wins this one 21-20. What? That's thanks to the Texans' defense. Trevor Lawrence has a 10th lowest passer rating, 67.1, against pressure this season, and the 10th fewest yards per pass since 2024 at just 5.8. Houston has the third highest quarterback pressure rate since the beginning of last season. It's nearly 38%, and they've allowed the third lowest passing success rate with pressure since the beginning of last season, just 28%. Okay, we've got one more upset. Any guess where I'm going to go here? Los Angeles? I'm not going to lie, this one surprised even me because the Broncos are at the Chargers and they're at SoFi Stadium, where the 2-0 Bolts are 2.5-point favorites and the total is 46 points. Bo Nix is averaging his fewest yards per attempt, 4, and third lowest passer rating, 46.4, when he's pressured in his career. Denver's O-line has allowed the lowest quarterback pressure rate this season, just 16%, and the Chargers, they have the 8th lowest pressure rate this season, generating, so their defense, it's just under 30%, 29.5, and they just lost Khalil Mack. Justin Herbert is streaking in two ways. Number one, he's had two or more passing touchdowns with no interceptions in four straight games, tied for the longest active streak with Lamar Jackson. And he's had a 110 or more passer rating in five consecutive games. That's tied for the longest streak since Mahomes in 2018. Importantly, though, he's got a 138.2 passer rating against the blitz. That's second best in the NFL. And the Broncos defense, they blitz at the highest rate. It's over 51%. They also lead the NFL with 70 sacks since the beginning of last season. And their streak is that they have 7 games with 5 or more sacks in that span. Bottom line, how does my math support a Denver 23-22 win? One part is no Khalil Mack for LA. He's out for a couple of weeks. And part two is something about the Denver defense. They've allowed the 4th lowest rushing success rate against quarterback under center attempts this season. And LA, 51% of their rush attempts come when the quarterback's under center. They also have the 3rd fewest yards per rush when the quarterback is under center at 2.5. So they're going to have to try to beat the Broncos with the pass, which is tough. Despite a weird outing against the Colts, it is still a great pass defense as well. Trivia time. This is where I force you to stick around to the end of the show to learn the answers. Here are 3 trivia questions to stump your friends. Number one. Only 2 teams remain who have scored on each of their opening drives in weeks 1, 2, and now actually week 3. One is the Buffalo Bills. Who is the other one? Number 2. Only 2 teams remain who don't have at least one receiver on their team with at least 80 receiving yards. Name both teams. Number 3. There's one player who's already managed to have one game with over 100 rushing yards and another game with over 100 receiving yards. Name the player. Let's hit Atlanta at Carolina, where the road team Falcons are 6-point favorites and the total is 43.5. Atlanta's defense has allowed 458 total yards and 29 points through the first 2 games. That's the fewest points allowed by Atlanta in the first 2 games of a season since 2010, and the fewest total yards allowed since 1986. And the pressure's working. They have a 46.3 quarterback pressure percentage, 4th best. Poor Bryce Young has been pressured 37 times already. That's tied for the most. And under pressure, he has 3 touchdowns with 2 interceptions. My point on Carolina's defense is about J.C. Horn again, because he's awesome. We're going to track him like a lot, probably. He's allowed 2 receptions and 14 yards on 14 targets with an interception in coverage this season. That's an 18.8 passer rating. That's really darn good. 5 career games against Atlanta, he's had 1 interception, 3 passes defense, and he's covered Drake London on 34 total routes. Now, this is interesting because Drake London has good games against the Panthers. He's allowed 2 receptions, 16 yards, and 1 touchdown on 3 targets. So I hope we get a lot of London and Horn matchup, and we'll see who wins this round. Final score, Atlanta wins 25-20 because of the right kind of defensive pressure, as in the blitzes work for them. They do it at the fifth highest rate, over 37% of the time, and they allow just the sixth lowest passing success rate when they blitz. Poor Bryce Young is tracking at the fifth lowest EPA per dropback against the blitz this season. It's -0.88. Another division game, this time in the AFC South, where the 2-0 Colts head to Nashville to meet the Titans. Indy is a 3.5-point favorite, and the total is 49.5 points. Fun fact, the Colts are the first team in NFL history to score on their first 10 possessions of a season, and the first team in the Super Bowl era with zero punts in each of their first two games. Daniel Jones has the most passing yards, 588, by a Colts player in the first 2 weeks of a season since the Hall of Famer Peyton Manning in 2010, and that was 688. He also joins him as the first Colts player with five or more offensive touchdowns with no giveaways in the weeks 1 and 2 since that same Manning year of 2010. And Daniel Jones leads the NFL with 9.3 yards per attempt, which is pretty fun. On the other side of the ball, as of right now, the Titans rookie Cam Ward is last in the NFL in yards per attempt at 4.7, but that number will increase, and he's been under the third most pressure, 45%. He does happen to be the only quarterback drafted number one overall in the common draft era to not throw an interception in either of his first two starts. His first two opponents were also both 2024 playoff teams with a defensive player who won an AP award, Pat Surtain and Jared Verse. So he's done it against really good competition. Bottom line, I have the Colts winning this one 24-20. This one is about JT. He leads the NFL with 236 rushing yards and 313 scrimmage yards. And on inside rushes, which is about 57% of their total rushing attempts, he's got 0.2 EPA. Whoa, that's second best among running backs. And Tennessee has allowed the second most rushing yards over expected to inside rushes this season at 3.9. And they're one of two teams to allow two or more rushing yards over expected to inside runs. Who's the other one? Carolina. And we've talked about their run defense as being not good. There's not a great way to segue from that last game into this next one. And it's a weird one because they rarely play each other. But the Saints are traveling all the way up to Seattle to face the Seahawks, who are 7.5-point home favorites, and the total is 41.5 points. The Saints' defense has fared well against quick passes. They've allowed the sixth lowest completion percentage to them and the third lowest yard per attempt average at 4.3. So it could be strength on strength, because what did we see from Sam Darnold last week against the Steelers? Well, a really fast time to throw, 2.71 seconds, and 51% of his passes coming in under 2.5 seconds. He earned 140 yards against the Steelers with that, which is the third most off of quick passes in his career. On the other side, Seattle's defense leads the NFL with a 49.4 pressure rate this season. They're also doing it without blitzing. They have the second lowest blitz rate. They only blitz on 13% of plays. They're one of four teams with a 40 or more percent pressure rate on plays without the blitz this season. Theirs is 46.3. As for the matchup, Spencer Rattler has the eighth fewest yards per pass, 3.8, and passing success rate of just 24% when he's pressured on dropbacks without the blitz. So it's a bad matchup for Rattler. Bottom line, I have Seattle winning this one 23-17, which continues the Seahawks' trend of allowing 7 points, which they did in each of their first two games. The last time the Seahawks started the season with three straight games allowing 17 or fewer points was 2013, and they happened to win the Super Bowl in that season. That's some fun Seattle history, and there's even more in the Green Bay at Cleveland tilt, where the Packers are looking to maintain their streak of winning 11 straight games against non-divisional opponents. They're one of two teams, them and the Chargers, that haven't trailed in any game yet this season. The Packers are 7.5-point favorites. The total is 42. Micah Parsons and Myles Garrett are the only players with 10 or more sacks in each of the previous four seasons. This is the third meeting in the last 20 seasons by players who both had 10-plus sacks in each of the prior four seasons. Myles Garrett leads the NFL with 3.5 sacks this season, and he needs 2.5 sacks to pass Reggie White with 108 for the most sacks since 1982 by a player prior to their 30th birthday. Micah Parsons led Green Bay with 8 quarterback pressures in week 2. He played 68% of the defensive snaps, and he has the second most pressures in the NFL in week 2, just to Will Anderson, who had 10. Bottom line in this one, I have a 9-point Packer win, 25-16. As for Green Bay's defense, they've allowed 3.7 yards per play this season, the fewest in the NFL. And on offense, Jordan Love has the best passer rating against the blitz, 141.2, and all four of his passing touchdowns have come against man coverage. The Browns have utilized man coverage at the second highest rate in the NFL, so it's a bad matchup for the Browns defense. We need to talk about scoring touchdowns, as in our weekly wildcards, our list of three lesser expected touchdown scores. I'm talking about guys who aren't necessarily the top few at their position, guys you didn't draft in round one of your fantasy league, players who have elevated end zone reaching odds this particular week. Number one, Jonnu Smith against the Patriots. You know Aaron Rodgers likes those passes to tight ends. I already told you about the short passes. So Jonnu Smith against the Patriots. Number two, George Pickens against the Bears. Now, if CeeDee Lamb draws away some of the coverage without Kyler Gordon playing, or even if Kyler Gordon's playing but not 100%, this could create the best opportunity for George Pickens to find Pater. And number three, Devontae Adams against the Eagles. Which brings us to our final Sunday matchup to analyze, the divisional round playoff rematch, Rams and Eagles in Philadelphia. The 2-0 defending Super Bowl champs are 3.5-point favorites, and the total is 44.5 points. There's some good strength-on-strength matchups in this one. Let's start with when the Rams are on offense, where Matthew Stafford, he has a league-high 13.2 yards per attempt when targeting the slot. But the Eagles' defense, they've allowed the second fewest yards per attempt, just 4, and the second lowest success rate on passes targeted to the slot. Stafford's time to throw, 2.55 seconds. That's the fourth quickest in the NFL. But the Eagles' defense, they've allowed just 5.2 yards per attempt on quick passes. That is lower than their league-leading average of 5.5 last season. Puka has been perfect when he's been targeted in the seams, 12 of 12. But on those two, the Eagles' defense has a great metric here. They've allowed the fifth lowest completion percentage and fourth fewest yards per target, just 5.8, on passes targeted in the seams this season. One more here. Nacua has the second most yards from the slot, and the Eagles have been the second best at limiting such yards since the beginning of last season, which kind of ties back up to that first point. And the Rams defense that they'll face, well, 5 different Ram defenders who've had at least 25 pass rushes have a double-digit pressure rate. That's tied for second most in the league. Switching to the Eagles offense, Jalen Hurts has targeted a receiver on a league low 71% of his dropbacks this season. That is 4 percentage points lower than the next closest quarterback in this metric. Instead, he's been scrambling a ton. A league high is 17.2% of his dropbacks, to be precise. He's also not carried a ball on a design run through 2 weeks. This doesn't include sneaks. Obviously, he's done that. But he had 48 design runs last season. That was the fourth most in the NFL. And he hasn't targeted any pass catcher at the intermediate level yet this season. That's 10 to 19 air yards. Every other quarterback has at least 4 such attempts. He does have 5 deep attempts, and 2 of them have been completed for 79 yards. Just a reminder, in that divisional win, Hurts was pressured on 13 of his 30 dropbacks, 43%. He was sacked 7 times, that's a career high, and 4 of those were when they were just facing a 4-man rush, too. And he had his fastest time to throw, 2.81 seconds, of all games last season. So the point is they adapted. He was super efficient underneath, and he took 4 deep attempts, and he had just 1 reception for 31 yards on over 10 air yard passes. They are very adaptable, so don't let these initial trends and the initial first 2 weeks of data kind of trick you into thinking that they aren't good anymore. On defense, second-year pass rusher Jalix Hunt has more than doubled his pressure rate through 2 games. It's tracking at 18.2%. Last season, it was 7.4. He also has 6 pressures. He only had 9 all of last season, and 4 of those 6 have come on early downs. However, the defense is not really sacking their opponents. They have 2, which is tied for second fewest. They sacked Stafford 5 times in both matchups against the Rams last season. And that will be interesting because if Steve Avila plays, that's what he's tracking to as of now, that could be a help for Stafford. Bottom line, I have Philadelphia winning 25-20 because of just how effective the combination of Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts, especially sneaking, is. I also think new offensive coordinator Kevin Petullo gets the passing game going. He was the passing game coordinator last year. He'll figure it out. I'm not blindly inserting the Saquon 200 rushing plus 2 rushing touchdowns in both matchups against the Rams and saying, hey, he's just going to average 8.8 yards per carry on this one too. Or that, you know, he's going to have 3 70-plus yard touchdowns. Okay. This is why. It's because Philadelphia, on 37.5% of their rushes have been against stacked boxes. That's third highest in the NFL. They have the eighth most rushing yards over expected against stacked boxes this season. And the Rams have allowed the second most EPA per rush with stacked boxes this season. So Saquon, by the way, he's better on outside runs last season. This year, he's more balanced. He's great on both, actually. And even though he's running to the outside more, he's super efficient. So he's even increased his efficiency on inside rushes as well. To round this out, let's do good for six. Six menu notes my model has occurring in over 50% of simulations. Today, they're all about rookies, and they're in order of bland to spicy. Number one, Panthers rookie wideout Teteroa McMillan to haul in more than 4.5 passes against the Falcons. He has the most receiving yards, 168, in the first two career games by any player in Carolina history. He's also tracking at the eighth most in the NFL just broadly. And where he's been lining up could take advantage of AJ Terrell's injury. Number two, Colts rookie tight end Tyler Warren, who did appear on the injury report this week, to haul in more than 4.5 passes against the Titans. He's the first rookie tight end in NFL history with 75 plus receiving yards in each of his first two games. Number three, Patriots rookie running back Travion Henderson to have more than 18.5 receiving yards against the Steelers. Pittsburgh is historically very good at limiting quarterback scramble yards. And even with their injury report, including Alex Highsmith, I still think they'll be able to get pressure. So short passes are a Josh McDaniel hallmark. I think that happens in this matchup. Number four, Giants rookie rusher Cam Scataboo to have more than 1.5 receptions against the Chiefs. I also like more than 9.5 rushing attempts. The Chiefs will bring the pressure, and Scataboo has been the bruiser. Number five, Raiders rookie running back Ashton Jeanty to top 54.5 rushing yards against the Commanders. It would be less risky to take more than 1.5 receptions here, but there are some signals in the data that suggest Jeanty is very close to really breaking through. This is a tough test against Washington, but I think Chip Kelly's brain is very valuable in making this a reality. And number six, Packers rookie wideout Matthew Golden to haul in more than 2.5 passes against the Browns. This would be more than his total on the season so far because he has two. So this one is the riskiest one, but I think he catches at least 3 passes. Don't worry, I didn't forget to give the trivia answers. Okay, so for number one, there's two teams who have scored on each of their opening drives in weeks 1 and 2. One is the Bills, and they did it again on Thursday night. Who is the other one? It's Chicago. Caleb and the Bears have scored a touchdown on each of their opening drives this season. And by the way, they have just 2 total touchdowns on all other drives. Number two, the question was, only 2 teams remain who don't have at least 1 receiver on their team with at least 80 receiving yards. Name the 2 teams. One is Houston, the other is Philadelphia. And question three was, there's one player who's already managed to have 1 game with 100 plus rushing yards and another game with 100 plus receiving yards. Name the player. Did you guess Bijan Robinson? He's the only player with both a game with 100 plus rushing yards. That's week 2 at Minnesota, and a game with 100 plus receiving yards. That was week 1 at Tampa so far this season. And lastly, don't forget, we still have the Monday night show coming up. Thank you so much for hanging out. I always appreciate it. This is so much fun. Please subscribe, like, get the audio format, take it in your pocket with you, leave comments, tell me what you want to hear more about, tell me what kind of things you like which weekly wild cards you're picking, or perhaps which menu items you like, bland to spicy, of course, because that's how we roll. I appreciate your time, and I love hanging out with you. Enjoy Sunday's games, and remember, come back for Monday Night Football.